All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Kezia Vita, and I'm here with Nathaniel Hodership, also known as Nathaniel V. Dust, who is a breathwork practitioner and substance abuse counselor in Los Angeles. Thanks for having this conversation with me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely glad to be here
Me
today.
too. Me too. And I was just thinking about when we first met in 2013, and I kind of wanted to start this by asking you to sort of talk about where you were at that point in 2013, like where you'd come so far in terms of dream breath work, and then where you are now, and if that's a really big question, but if that makes any
sense.
We can certainly
talk about that. And actually, I hesitate. I don't like necessarily to correct anything, but because the nature of addiction and the world that we exist in today and it's such a gnarly thing, it's important that we get the vernacular correct around this because there's so much stigma involved. So substance abuse doesn't really exist. It's what we've found is it's substance use disorder, and that's kind of the space that I work as a counselor. So helping people impact their lives with substance use disorder, not substance abuse.
Gotcha.
So just to clarify about that. And yeah, 2013, man, that seems like a lifetime ago.
Yep.
My goodness. So when we met in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being so impacted by the work. So you folks did some dream work stuff on a group level, introducing the dream work to the group. And I watched how polarizing it was to the group conscious, and like how many people were just so sideways about, you know, the medicine that you were bringing there. And so I became really intrigued. I was like, oh, this is probably something that I should be doing, because it's obviously powerful. So, I mean, at that time I had, early 2013, because
yeah.
I had just moved out to California.
Okay.
And I was trying to build my practice out here a little bit, bringing breath work into treatment centers and trying to just get that off and running. And there was just so much chaos in my life trying to sort things out, because I'd moved out to California with like $3,000 in my pocket and not knowing where I was going to stay, not having a place to stay, not even having a job, not knowing, just kind of going out to California because that's where my clients were. And it was such a fascinating thing because it was like everything kind of dried up at the time. I moved out here and all my regular clients that I was driving out to see every month to California, like, they were just not wanting sessions.
And just back up a little so people understand, like, where had you been up until that point? Like, what kind of sessions were you doing?
So breathwork facilitation, using breathwork to help people kind of overcome whatever issues they were struggling with. And so this particular breathwork is taught by a gentleman named David Elliott. So he's kind of made it what it is today. And I've learned and studied under him for the last 8 years. But when I found breathwork, I was in one of the darkest periods of my life. I had just had a few attempts at suicide. And I was trying to find a path out of my own addiction struggles, my own substance use disorder, and find healing for myself. So I found this work. A woman named Corey Boris introduced it to me, and it was really powerful. I was skeptical at first. She was burning sage and talking about self-love, and that really turned me off. So I don't know what she said to get me to buy in there, but something that I was going to feel really good by the time we were done. So I participated in the group, and she was absolutely right. I felt fantastic by the time I was done and had a conversation with her about learning how to use this technique to help other people. So this work is simple. Breath work is it's this two-stage pattern, and you're breathing in the low belly and then the upper chest and out. And what's happening is we're working with the nervous system to get it back into regulation. So oftentimes people, especially with trauma, the nervous system becomes dysregulated and you struggle to identify what's safe and what's dangerous. So you interpret really safe situations as often dangerous, and you interpret really dangerous situations as often as safe. And the same thing goes with people. Like, oh, this person seems really safe. I'm gonna date them when it turns out they're kind of a psychopath. A lot of people struggle with this. So this is about getting the nervous system back into regulation. You're also quieting the mind down enough for you to have an experience of what it's like to be in your body. And your body is where all the pain is. So once you get into the body, you're able to access that pain and then find resolution to it. So this technique is helpful for people who are disconnected from themselves, from their emotions, from their spirit, if you want to call it that, and from their life. So that's kind of the work that I was doing for people when I decided to move out to California.
Gotcha. And so from there, yeah, we met at that retreat and we started doing dreams together. And yeah, I guess I'm just curious from your perspective, like what did the dreams kind of bring in that was different from the breath, or how did they work together for you?
I mean, the dreams for me and just working with you, I think, of course, the tool's only as good as a practitioner, really. And working with you in the dream world was certainly something that allowed me to clear a path to creating a relationship for myself, with myself, but also with other people. I remember there was a lot of dreams that surfaced around just the way that I would interact with human beings. And so it allowed me to access myself and give me like tangible evidence and tangible visualization of what was going on and what being connected to myself really looked like. So the breath allowed me to access myself and feel that and feel what it was like in my body, but the dreams gave me sort of an external focal point for me to be able to say, ah, this is what it feels like to be connected with myself outside of here. And here's this representation, here's this archetype, here's this mythology that I can kind of weave into this interconnection with the breathing. So I feel like the dreams really opened up the pathway to spirit, because I'm a very skeptical person by nature. I don't buy into the bullshit. And dreams are one of those things that I feel like people can be like, oh, that's just hippie woo-woo bullshit. But they give you like tangible things that you can grab a hold of and then apply to your life, which I really like.
Yeah, no, I really love that you brought up the idea of relationship, because that's something I've been thinking about a lot, how dreams really do focus in on that. And like you're saying, first and foremost to your relationship to yourself. And it's also really beautiful what you say, that it helped you connect spiritually. I guess I'm curious if you could speak more to that, kind of as a skeptical person and for people who sort of have trouble with language or just feel a lot of cynicism or judgment when they hear about the possibilities for healing in alternative ways, because I know that's something you've kind of been through. And what do you say to them?
I tell them to be skeptical. I encourage skepticism. I think it's an important part. On the other side of the spectrum is this like really just buy anything kind of like, oh, this is going to help me, so I'm going to do this thing. And even if it's like this really, we throw critical thinking skills out the window oftentimes in the realm of the new age. And I hate to call any of this new age, but there is a lot of healing that's coming around in that kind of alternative way. So firstly, like, be skeptical. I think that's important. Be skeptical. Don't believe anything that I have to say. Just come and do the work. So don't buy what I'm selling, because I'm not really selling anything. I don't need to sell anything, but don't believe what I have to say. Just come in and experience it and see what happens. Judge the hell out of it. Think it's bullshit. Think it's woo-woo, and then just come and do the work. The reason I love both dreams and breath for this reason is because the dreams are like, it's all internal. It's all within you. It's not some magic woo-woo bullshit that exists anywhere else. It's your dream, and it's your feelings that you're experiencing in the dream. It's your unconscious we're working with. I'm not really doing anything at all. Like, so working with you, like, you're always reflecting it back to me. Well, how does that make you feel? Makes me feel like shit, goddamn. But it's all an intrinsic thing. So whatever my unconscious and my subconscious are bringing up and working with, like, that's all my stuff. So I don't have to necessarily believe in God or spirit or a higher power or any of that. I can just tune into archetypes. And archetypes is something I think even the most skeptical people can understand and work with. So yeah, the dreams are really opening doorways to spirit in that way. That's like God, you know, I'm not a God person, that God created me in 7 days and all that jazz. I don't necessarily buy into that story. God exists, certainly. If God does exist, it exists within mankind, womankind, humankind, I suppose. And that's a really lovely touchstone with the dreams. Like, if spirit exists, it's within me, but it's, you know, it's also within you, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, and I think, the other thing I always think about in terms of the connection between breath and dreams is the natural quality, which I think you're speaking to a bit, where, if you didn't breathe, you wouldn't be alive, and dreams don't necessarily sustain life, but they're just this really natural part of our existence that can't really be avoided or controlled. So yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things swimming around about addiction, and I think addiction to all kinds of things is kind of one of the biggest things people are dealing with in their lives. So how does that fit into breath work for you, and what are you seeing working?
Well, I mean, that's a more complicated issue, and addiction is the thing that impacts. I mean, I was at a retreat recently, and I asked everybody to close their eyes and just, you know, if they've been impacted by addiction in some way, to raise their hand. I was expecting most of the groups to raise their hand, but every single person in that group raised their hand. There were like 50 of us, and I was just like, holy crap.
Yeah.
So it's indiscriminate in the way that it impacts people. And there are a lot of good things that are going on with it. Struggling against addiction right now, it's really heartbreaking. The 2016 numbers show that 175 people die every day of opiate overdose. And that's just overdose. We're not talking about DUI. We're not talking about whatever. It's just overdose. And then you look at alcohol use disorder and what's happening there. And I think it's somewhere like 80,000 people. Don't quote me on those numbers. It might be a little number. If I remember correctly, the article I was just reading, it was 80,000 people die a year because of alcohol use disorder. And it's a tremendous amount of people just dying because they're consuming, trying to numb out, trying to just feel okay. And it's reaching epic proportions here in the United States. And I guess I'll start with the bad news is. The bad news, I feel personally, is that we're not really doing any good until we can change the laws around how we treat people who suffer from substance use disorders. So right now they're criminals, and that's why I guess in the beginning why I, you know, I felt it so compelled to make sure we're using the right vernacular, because there's so much stigma around. It's like a person who struggles with this life-threatening disease is cast aside, and they're a criminal, and they're thrown out, and they're weak-willed, and oh, addiction isn't even a disease. You just don't have any willpower, or things like that occur all the time. So we have this culture where if you struggle with substance use disorder, you're a flawed human being, you're broken, you're fucked up, you're not okay, you're criminal, we don't want you around, you need to be thrown in jail, we need to kill the drug dealers, which is the newest solution coming out of the White House, which makes my skin crawl. It makes me sad to know that that's what's going on. So until we can reframe addiction as something that is treatable, that you can find recovery with, And there are solutions out there. And it's not just about willpower, and it's not about godlessness, and it's not about any of these things that are perpetuated in our culture. It's about trying to just cope with your reality. And so a person picks up a substance, and for the first time when they consume that substance and they feel okay in their body, they feel like everything's going to be okay. To me, it speaks to a vast intelligence within that person that they found something that allows them to feel okay. Why wouldn't they continue to use that substance over and over? So the sad thing is, until we change the laws around addiction and we really build some awareness and some advocacy, I don't know that we're going to be doing a lot of very good work. And on the other side of that, there is some work that's being done. It is a treatable illness. People are finding recovery. I mean, right now I'm looking at 8 years, 8.5 years of recovery myself, and there are pathways out. On a broader theme, it speaks to classism, it speaks to racism, it speaks to the way that we treat each other in this country. And all of these things are variables which impact the ability to find recovery. So if we address those larger issues, I believe that we're going to find a lot more success. And right now what's working is there is access to mental health treatment. There is access to recovery centers. There is access to support groups like Smart Recovery, like Alcoholics Anonymous. There are a lot of great things that are out there supporting people. So with breathing, to me, it comes down to treating trauma. I don't feel like I'm less concerned with, say, treating addiction than I am than with treating the trauma that is underlying all the issues that we struggle with. So if you, the way I would frame it is like, how much pain does a person have to be in to put a needle full of cocaine into their neck? Like, how much pain do you have to be in for that to be a solution to the issues? So treating trauma, I feel, is in the next few years is going to be the biggest part of any sort of recovery community healing work that's going to go on, is treating trauma.
And how do you feel the breath work does that?
Yeah, so breath work is certainly getting the nervous system back into regulation, and that can happen. What happens is the nervous system gets imprinted to respond to external stimuli or internal stimuli in a certain way. So if I get in a car wreck when I'm very young, any situation that is even remotely similar to that, if I have trauma, is going to, now I'm gonna, my nervous system is gonna react and respond to that situation as if it were the traumatic event occurring again. So what I love about breath work is its ability to get the nervous system back into regulation so that you don't have to respond to that stimuli in the same way that you were. So that's a big part of it. The other thing is a lot of emotions begin to surface with breath work. And as breath work starts to work with a person, those emotions begin to bubble up to the surface, and they can feel the emotions in a really safe container, and they're able to process that and move through that, with a team of people. I like to work with the team personally.
Sometimes when people come in with trauma, there's this idea of it being healed in a certain timeline, and like
Oh, okay.
just to kind of like speak to, and maybe just for your own experience, like what that journey's been like for you, recognizing the trauma and kind of working through it, and then continuing to work, and how that unfolds.
So people will want to come in and have these ideas like, oh, I'm going to come and do this trauma work, and then I'm going to be free and not have any trauma, and have the trauma cleared from my body, which is a great term, but it's not always accurate. And I think when we say that, people may have this idea that the healing journey, you come in, you work on your trauma, and then you're healed.
Right.
And that's not a real thing at all. You don't come in, do the dream work, and then face your demons, and then everything's okay. It's a continual process. It's lifelong. It's something that I find both glorious and disturbing. It's something that I'm going to work on for the rest of my life due to the trauma that I have. It's, to me, the real healing is about shrinking the period of of time where you're dysregulated. So if I find myself in a situation where I become, my nervous system gets really stimulated and activated, it's about letting that be there and be okay, and then shrinking the window where it's so consuming. So instead of being messed up and dysregulated for the next week or 3 weeks or a month or whatever, just from this one situation, it's about shrinking the amount of time that I spend in that space where my nervous system's so amped up. And I feel that that is the real power of trauma work, is when you are able to go into these situations again and be stimulated for a moment and then be like, okay, I'm all right. There it is.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I like the way you say it. I think it's true that shrinking the amount of time, and really just being, I think to me it comes back to this idea of relationship, like being in relationship with these parts of ourselves and just constantly being asked to be more loving and more gentle and more tender when those parts come up or those experiences are present. So I guess I'm also just curious because we are going to be coming together at the end of the month, kind of if there's anything you're looking forward to, or what you see the combination of breathwork and dreamwork providing for people.
So I love this work so much, and in my own sessions working with people's dreams and then doing, say, some breath work in combination with it, it's a really powerful thing. And I'm really stoked to have you out here and to be able to work with you because of just how much I admire you and the work that you are doing with people, and just such the profound impact that I've had in my own life working with you in the dreams. And I know you'll be like, oh, it's all the dreams. You did all the work, yada, yada. Yeah. We, for sure, yes, I worked my ass off. But also, I think it's important to just acknowledge, like, I for sure wouldn't be here in this place in my life without the work that you have done with me. And so, yes, I did. I'd work my ass off, but if you didn't hold such a tender and poignant space for me, and put up with all my crazy bullshit that surfaced, I wouldn't be here. So, to be able to work with you now at this point, is really special to me. And the dream work constellation, bringing these two things together, I feel like we're really going to help people transform their lives with this work. And there's no better place really for it than LA. And I'm just really excited to see what can happen when people start to bring their dreams up on a group level and see how this interaction occurs with the constellation process, and then be able to then take that experience and process with the breath. I mean, I don't know. I don't think those people that are attending are going to walk out of that room the same.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate you saying that, and I feel you. And I mean, I think I've said this before, but we really met each other when we were both kind of starting out. And I learned so much from being able to hold that space for you and go through that journey with you in that role. And so it is like a total love fest in my heart that we're gonna be together, working together in this way, and we're really stepping both into, I think, our abilities in a way that's gonna be special. And just to bring in that balance that we've been talking about this whole time between just being really present with your breath and your body and feeling those feelings as they come up, and then using the dreams kind of as a map or a guide or a place to connect so that you can really tangibly hold on to, oh, this is what's actually happening to me when I'm having maybe the more bodily or emotional experiences that can arise in the breath work. And I'm definitely excited to be in Los Angeles.
One of the projects I've been working on is this breath work for recovery. I mean, that kind of started 8 years ago-ish, about that time, maybe 7.5 there, because I waited a little while before I got the training, before bringing people, bringing the work into treatment, because that's important. But Breathwork for Recovery started, like I said, 7.5 years ago-ish, and was really powerful for people. And we have kind of built this wonderful thing called the Recovery Circle, which is the support group for people seeking recovery from trauma, from substance use disorder, from eating disorder, from other mental illness.
So yeah, anything else you want to add for people before we go?
I don't know. I think that it's important that they. It's easy to despair, I think, especially with the heaviness that we talked about today. It's like, oh, the laws suck around addiction, and oh my God, there's never going to be any. This the trauma thing is always going to go on for the rest of my life. Yeah, I mean, it's going to suck. There are going to be some times that you despair and you find hopelessness. And I know that you and I have had plenty of conversations about my own hopelessness. And also, as you continue to do the work, as you continue on your healing journey, you're going to become so much better at dealing with these situations that pop up. So the trauma may always kind of be imprinted in that space, but you're going to be able to navigate those situations with so much more clarity and insight and strength and courage. And that's the real beauty of the trauma healing. So I would just say for those of you that are in this and just starting or hearing this and being like, holy hell, I'm going to do this the rest of my life. Yeah, you are. And it's going to even maybe become fun at some point. And the hopelessness, shrinks and it becomes smaller. And the impact of the trauma in your life shrinks and it becomes smaller. And I would encourage you, if you're not doing your dream work, you should probably get a session with Kezia so she can help you change your damn life. If she can help me change mine, you probably have an easier time.
Yeah, well, no, I really appreciate you ending on that sweet note, as I do think it's really important. I feel like there's a lot of despair out there right now. It's easy to pick up on, just turn on the news or whatever. Dreams are just really demanding that we stay in this place of imagination. And we remain there glued on to see what is the creativity that's going to come out next. I think breath and dreams are both into that.
Yeah, I think they are. And it's important work that's being done right now. And there are a lot of good practitioners who are stepping up to the plate to offer the healing to people. And it's such a sweet thing to see.
It really is. And I'm going to link up all the amazing work you're doing so people can get involved with breathwork and recovery. And of course, you also do private sessions of the breathwork and everything else that you do. And yeah, I'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah, I'm so excited, Kezia. Thanks for having me on today.
Of course, good to talk to you.